Hello, hello, Physionic Podcast. Hopefully the sound quality is still maintaining to be well, unlike, what, two podcasts ago. So with that, however, I would like to take a little bit of time to describe to you kind of what I'm considering the last of the podcasts on in a series. So I had this, you know, we went over one study or two studies in rat muscle cells that looked at the insulin signaling effects of saturated fats using palmitate, and then another one that looked at unsaturated fats versus saturated fats on insulin signaling. And then we moved from there, we went to a human study that looked at a single meal consumption of high saturated fat versus unsaturated fat. And we saw the effects there on insulin sensitivity that I described. And this is going to be the final one. So this is going to be the final podcast where I discuss a potential exception to this, to the rules that we've set or the data that we've experienced up to this point. However, I don't want you to think that at the end of this podcast, we will have a definitive answer. I'll give you another clue to the answer, but we're not going to have a definitive answer, even if I'm ending the series of podcasts on this. I will have other series on saturated fat and its impact on insulin sensitivity. But this one, this podcast, is to focus on how does saturated fat affect muscle insulin sensitivity in lean individuals versus overweight individuals. And this comes from information from a study that essentially gives you the answer in the title, and that is called Palmitate Acutely Induces Insulin Resistance in Isolated Muscle from Obese But Not Lean Humans. Okay, we're going to see if that actually is the case, because in the video form of this podcast, I had many critiques of how the researchers ended up doing this their experiments. However, I do think that at the end, we will still get information. So we'll still get applicable information. So how did these researchers go about this process? So they recruited, I think, 19 and 16, I forgot, in overweight. Let me quick open up my notes real quick. Yes, so 19 lean, quote unquote, lean women and 16 overweight women for this study. Now, I realize that if you are a man, then you're thinking, well, this doesn't apply to me. And technically, that's true. However, if I had to bet my non-existent hat, I would say that these results would apply to men as well. So take that to whatever bank you want. Maybe you won't get much out of it, but there you have it. So they took these overweight individuals and these lean individuals, and by lean, let me go ahead and describe the characteristics between them. They were middle-aged, so about 47 years old. They had obviously differences in their BMI. So the lean individuals, and this is why I was saying kind of quote unquote, the lean individuals had a BMI of 24, which is on the higher end of lean, or normal weight, I should say normal weight, but they called them lean. So does this then mean that these individuals were like bodybuilders or fitness competitors or anything like that? Highly unlikely, highly unlikely, by comparison to the overweight individuals that had a BMI of 35. So I think that there's probably a gradation scale within the 24 to 35. So the more overweight you are, the more of the results you're going to have for the overweight individuals, and the more the leaner you are, in that you are kind of average weight, you take care of yourself, but you're not ridiculously ripped or anything like that, you're going to be more on the leaner side. So you kind of have to put yourself in one camp or the other. So there are these differences in weight, obviously, because they have to be there, because this is a comparison between two groups of different weights. And another difference that they had was that they had elevated insulin and greater insulin resistance in the obese individuals, so in the overweight individuals. Another difference is adiponectin levels, which is a known as an adipokine, which is a hormone that is released from your fat cells that binds to the cells of your body. And what it does is it combats insulin resistance. So it makes your cells more insulin sensitive. So that's something to keep in mind. That adiponectin levels were lower in the overweight individuals, almost half. And finally, leptin levels. I'm just going to quick mention this, although it's not going to actually be a huge player in this study. But leptin levels were considerably higher in the overweight individuals. If you're not familiar with what leptin does, leptin is also secreted from the fat cells, although technically it's also secreted from other cells, but largely secreted from the fat cells. And it's a homeostatic mechanism in that when it's being secreted, it essentially says stop eating or stop consuming, reduce hunger. All those things are affected by leptin when leptin levels are high and circulating in your bloodstream. So when you start losing weight, one of the first things to drop is your leptin levels. However, in these overweight individuals, they had much higher leptin levels, so you would think that they wouldn't be consuming as much. But the theory, the way that it goes currently, is that overweight individuals have elevated leptin levels because their leptin levels, once it binds to the leptin receptor, the receptor is insensitive to the leptin. So, kind of like how we have insulin insensitivity. In this situation, we also have leptin insensitivity. We have no evidence for that based off of this study. I'm just telling you what other studies have shown, just as a kind of a side rant. So, like I said, that's not that important, but the adiponectin levels may be important, and the insulin resistance is it may be important, and certainly the difference in weight between these two groups of individuals. So now, what did the researchers actually do now that we've described these two groups of individuals? They took muscle samples from the overweight population or sample, and they took muscle samples from the normal weight individuals and plated them onto a cell culture dish for each one, obviously, each condition. And then they exposed these muscle cells that they took from these individuals. So these are human muscle cells taken straight from the individuals. They exposed them to a control liquid, so control media, or the feeding liquid that actually feeds the cells. It's full of amino acids, it's filled with free fatty acids, fats that they need, and sugar. So, like blood sugar, it's supposed to be kind of like a proxy for what our bloodstream offers to our cells to keep them alive. So it does the same thing. We do that in the lab, which I actually need to head to the lab quite soon myself to look at my cells. So they have an exposure to just the regular media, and then they have an exposure to palmitate that's added to the media. So palmitate is the saturated fat of interest. And then they have another condition, which we're not as interested in, but I'll still tell you the results for that, is palmitate plus adiponectin. So they're adding saturated fat. So they have three conditions. One, control, so no saturated fat added. Second, palmitate, so saturated fat is added. And then a third condition with palmitate plus adiponectin. Now it's important here to mention that the palmitate is in physiological concentration, so it's the amount that you would normally find in the bloodstream. However, the adiponectin that they add to the cells is in supraphysiological concentrations, so it's much higher than what you would find normally. So that's why I'm not so focused on the adiponectin. We can still get some kind of cool information from it, but is it going to be applicable to the real world? That's going to be tough to say. Now, after exposing these cells for 4 hours to each one of these conditions, what they did is they looked at two different groups of measures. One, they looked at the glucose uptake measure. So they looked at the amount of sugar that's taken out of the media and moved into the cells. This gives you a great indication of insulin sensitivity when they add insulin to the media as well, of course. And I'll describe that in just a second. And the second measure is insulin signaling. So looking at the molecules within the muscle cells, do they change? Are they differentially expressed? Are they in different concentrations between the overweight derived muscle cells and the lean, quote unquote, lean or normal weight derived muscle cells? Is there a difference between those two? So hopefully that's clear. Now, when they looked at the glucose uptake, so what they did is they took a basal measure in each of these three conditions, so our control with no saturated fat, our palmitate with saturated fat, and our third condition with saturated fat plus the adiponectin added, but no insulin is added to the cells. And they measure the amount of sugar that's taken up by the muscle cells. And then they have a second condition where they add insulin. So the same three conditions, but they add insulin to the cells. And they want to know, is there a difference? One, is there a difference? Like, do the cells even react to the insulin? The answer is yes, in both conditions, in the lean cells, lean-derived cells, and in the obese or overweight-derived cells, there's an increase in glucose uptake or sugar uptake from the addition of insulin. Great. So that's a great sign. If you don't have that, you might as well scrap your study, because if you're measuring insulin sensitivity and your cells aren't even reacting to insulin, that's kind of pointless. So in both conditions, there's an increase in uptake of glucose. So no difference there. However, where there is a difference is when the cells were exposed to palmitate or exposed to saturated fat, to that saturated fat. That then meant that the lean individuals, interestingly, had no difference. But the overweight individuals did experience a difference in that the palmitate reduced the glucose uptake into the muscle cells. So lean individuals, no negative effect of palmitate. Obese individuals, reduction in insulin sensitivity, presumably. Now, when they added the adiponectin, granted, in the lean individuals, there was again no difference because there was no difference to begin with. So it's going from no difference to no difference. Okay, clear. However, in the overweight individuals, the adiponectin addition led to a partial recovery of insulin sensitivity. So was it a complete recovery? No, it was not. However, there may have been a partial recovery of adiponectin. So that's this information then tells us that saturated fat in the form of palmitate seems to have a differential effect. It affects our muscle cells in overweight individuals in terms of their insulin sensitivity far more than it affects the lean individuals. So that's kind of a key point to take away. Now, a confounding variable that I mentioned in the video form of this podcast, and I always recommend that you check that out just because I have all the visuals so you can actually see the data and I have diagrams and things like that. The insulin resistance measures in the overweight individuals showed that there was insulin resistance or a greater level of insulin resistance in the obese or overweight individuals compared to the leaner individuals. So could this effect have been from the insulin resistance as opposed to the palmitate effect, the saturated fat effect? And if you look, and this was my point, you know, if you actually look at the data, the y-axis or the actual measures of change were the exact same between the lean and the obese individuals. So again, I realize that might be a little bit confusing over audio, but if you hop on over to the video version, you'll be able to see what I'm talking about. When you're looking at the data, the overall measurement range is the exact same if it's for the lean or for the overweight. So I think my opinion is that it's unlikely that the insulin resistance or the greater level of insulin resistance, not that they were completely insulin resistant, but the insulin resistance was the main driver of this reduced effect with palmitate, or this reduced glucose uptake effect. So, and the, on top of that, they didn't change the amount of insulin that they, it's not like they added double the amount of insulin to the obese cells, obese-derived cells. They added the same amount of insulin and they found the same effect in terms of the controls. If you compare the controls without any manipulation, they're about the same for between the two groups. However, you only see an effect in the overweight individuals. Now, something I should caution is, one, I mean, of course, these are still in cells while we're still taking them from humans, and while there's some level of applicability, something I should caution is, like, does this necessarily mean that if you were to continuously bombard these cells with saturated fat, would that eventually wear down the lean cells? It's possible. We're not getting that information here. But at least what we can say is that there's seems to be some form of protective effect in being a having normal weight or being somewhat leaner. And I would imagine that's even accentuated if you exercise, if you generally take care of yourself, and you have, let's say, a week where you decide to eat a lot more saturated fat, specifically palmitate. You know, would it then be far-fetched to say that your muscle cells will, you know, not even blink an eye and will be perfectly fine, you know, in a kind of a funny anthropomorphizing of the muscle cells? You could certainly make that argument. We'll say that much. But an overweight individual, they would have, their cells would have a much harder time dealing with that that burst of saturated fat. Okay, so then they looked at insulin signaling, and I'm just going to blast through this because honestly, I was not impressed with their measures at all. I would certainly recommend, again, that you go to the video to see what I'm talking about. But largely, they measured insulin signaling. I've gone over the insulin signaling cascade before, but usually, just kind of some highlights. You typically want the activation of a protein known as AKT. That's done by phosphorylation by another protein known as I think it's pyruvate dehydrogenase kinase. I could be wrong about that, though. I think that may be wrong. But at any rate, it's a protein that phosphorylates AKT or activates AKT. And then AKT will then inhibit another protein known as AS160. And AS160 inactivates the insulin signaling cascade. So AKT will then kind of hold off, will cock block the AS160 so that the insulin signaling cascade can continue to occur, so that they can fall in love. The insulin cascade can continue its journey to love. And essentially, so those two proteins have to be affected in particular ways. AKT has to have greater activation, and AS160 has to have greater inhibition. And what they found is that the total AKT levels were unchanged across the conditions, if that was, you know, with the palmitate and adiponectin, or if that was with the overweight versus lean individuals. However, then they had some really shoddy measures of the phosphorylation or the activation of AKT, where they showed no difference in one of the measures, but really, again, the measures were just really sloppily done. And then they had another one where they measured another site of phosphorylation of activation of AKT, and they did find a difference with the obese individuals, but they found no difference in the lean individuals. And that difference, I mean, that there was a reduction in the activation or phosphorylation of AKT in the obese individuals' cells that were exposed to palmitate. So this would indicate that the total AKT levels may be the same, but the actual activation of that AKT is reduced in the obese individuals if they're exposed to palmitate. And finally, they had a measure of AS160, so the inhibition of AS160. And I mean, I had some major problems with this. I'm going to tell you what the results are, but to be honest with you, I don't trust the results very much in this regard. So I would say that what they showed is that there was no difference in, so there's the same amount of inhibition of AS160 in the lean individuals, and there was reduced inhibition of AS160 in the obese individuals with no effect of adiponectin. So adiponectin did not rescue this this effect. And this would then lend itself to reduced insulin signaling. So the conclusion, kind of the takeaway here, is that the saturated fat palmitate reduces insulin sensitivity in overweight-derived muscle cells and does not have that effect in lean-derived muscle cells. So really what I took away from this is that, one, I like their glucose transport measures, their blood sugar, their insulin sensitivity measures as a whole. I did not like their insulin signaling measures. So if we just toss out the insulin signaling completely because they didn't do a great job, and we just look at the insulin sensitivity measures or glucose uptake measures, we could say that lean-derived muscle cells have a robust capacity to maintain their insulin sensitivity even when they're exposed to saturated fat, which is not the case when a person is overweight. So the overweight derived muscle cells have a dampened insulin sensitivity when exposed to saturated fat. Now, how do we translate that to a living situation? It's tough to do, and I hesitate to do that. And I always have people that just want to dismiss data simply because it's in cells. And while I completely agree that you can't look at cells and then say, oh, well, then this must be the case in the real world, it does give us clues. It's not like these cells came out of nowhere. They are mammalian cells. On top of that, they're human cells, and they're directly from human beings, so they're not some cell line. So this does give us some information on it from a mechanistic standpoint that maybe continuously exposing your cells to saturated fat, specifically palmitate, I always say that because it's important, that that could have detrimental effects on your insulin sensitivity. So something to keep in mind, but is this definitive proof? Well, no, definitely not. But also keep in mind all the other evidence that we've looked at up to this point in this series, where some of it was in these mechanistic cell lines, you know, these rat cell lines that I discussed in previous podcasts. But in this, and then the one before, one of the other ones that we discussed was in humans, and they found similar results. So it's not like this is, we're just basing things off of just this this study. But so, yes, I hesitate to say that based off of this single study where half the data, I didn't like the data. As in, like, it's not that it didn't jive with my personal point of view, but it was just shoddily done, that now we have evidence, clear-cut evidence, that if you are lean, don't worry about saturated fat. If you're overweight, yes, worry about saturated fat. It's not that easy. But at least it starts to move us in that direction of, okay, there may be something there that normal-weight individuals may not have as much to worry about in terms of the single measure of insulin sensitivity. I'm not saying that you might not have, I don't know, greater heart problems or greater cancer risk or anything like that. That's another point. So, you know, it's, everything has to be very systematic. That's my point. It always comes down to being very systematic in creating enough context around things so that we don't blow things out of proportion, or that we don't jump to conclusions about things. But that said, I don't want you walking away from this podcast thinking, well, that was useless, because it's not. It's giving us information, and now in the future I will investigate this again. I already have several studies lined up in terms of things that I'm going to read that are in humans. So now that we have this kind of effect in cells that do come from humans, now I'm going to, in the next series that I'm going to be looking into, I am going to be looking at several studies that are in humans, some a little bit more long-term studies, and see what kind of an effect these saturated fats have, as well as potentially investigate the effect that other saturated fats other than palmitate have on insulin sensitivity. So if you are a normal weight individual, maybe you might have a more pep in your step in that you might then believe, all right, great. There's some mild evidence that I may be somewhat protected from the negative effects of saturated fats. And for overweight individuals, it may be something of concern. It may be something to keep in mind that maybe you really do want to avoid saturated fats if you believe this data to be applicable to real life. So with that, I think that's where I'll leave things. Hopefully you learned something. I realize I'm always adding caveats and stuff, but really, as we get further into this, the details, and as we get more and more studies behind us, I will be able to eventually say, like, yeah, avoid saturated fat in this situation. Avoid it if you care about this. Avoid it if you care about that. Maybe consume it if you care about this, or it's okay to consume it in this scenario or these three scenarios. We're whittling away. It's like, think of it like a block. You have a block of wood, and with each study, we're making one cut into that block of wood, and we're trying to create a sculpture of, of carpentry. We're trying to create a carpentry out of this block of wood. And just if we use one study, that gives us just one chip away at the block of wood, which is great. But everybody just kind of looks at it and like, well, that didn't do anything. Like, I didn't learn anything. I don't know any added information. But as we keep chipping away and we keep learning little pieces of data, little pieces of information, where eventually it's starting to form into our model that we want, into our sculpture that we want. And eventually we're going to get to a point where we've covered 20, 30 studies on a topic. And if most of them point towards one direction, not the band, then we will have strong evidence to create these layers of understanding, like I described earlier, of these individuals may be protected, these individuals may want to avoid it, these individuals may want, if they're diabetic, they may want to consume this instead, because we have four studies that show this, and that's the scientific process. That's how we're going to get to better understanding, and we're going to get a far greater wealth of information overall. So I really hope that you understand that, because I need that patience. I am impatient as well, but I need that from a, I imagine that you're a science-based, a science-minded individual that wants clear-cut answers in time, not clear-cut answers from one study and then we jump to conclusions. So I will stop my rant there, but I just want to say that I really appreciate when I meet people that are patient and want to learn in a stepwise fashion, because this leads to the most complete understanding of how our body functions and our health and our performance and all these things. And I can't wait for the next 60 years of my life where I'm just continuously digging into all of this stuff with you so that you can learn for the betterment of your health, just as the same as I will be looking for the betterment of my own health and the people around me. I appreciate you. Thank you for stopping by, and till next time, have a good one, guys. Bye.